Today's scripture reading will be from Colossians chapter 3. That's Colossians chapter 3, verses 5 through 10. Therefore, put to death your memories which are on the earth: fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desires, and covetousness, which is adultery. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience, in which yourselves once walked with you lived in them. But now you yourself are to put all of these things, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language, out of your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you have put all the old man with his deeds and have put on the new man, who is renewed in knowledge according to the image of him who created him.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Sir, good to see all of you here with us today, and we look forward to the opportunity we can be together this evening at 6 o'clock, and we are going to talk about our theme for this month, and that involves the idea of getting to know God by the fear of the Lord. The book of Proverbs, chapter 2 is the context of our theme for the month. Verse 1 says, "My son, if thou wilt receive my words and lay up my commandments with thee, so as to incline thy ear unto wisdom and apply thy heart to understanding," verse 5 says, "then shalt thou understand the fear of Jehovah and to find knowledge of God." That is the thought that we're going to talk about this evening. Follow like. Those are two words that I'm sure you have seen often. If you are doing anything from a technology standpoint on the internet or web pages or social media, you see those two words quite often. I remember the days when this idea of like started, and it was several years ago. It probably could have been 15 years ago at least. That I remember the days when, probably it's a lot longer than that, I remember hearing a lot of teenagers talk about what it's like this, and you know what like, it's almost every sentence they said had the word like in it. You know, I'm like this, and I feel like, and you know, it's like, I kept hearing that over and over. I think, what are they doing? Is there not another word that they know besides like? I preached a lesson on that. I haven't preached that here. I preached it a long time ago. I talk about like. Just that's all the lesson pertained to is the word like, because I heard that so much. Well, when we look at the word like today and the word follow, we click that word. Because either we have appreciated what we have read, we are grateful for what we saw, we were maybe inspired or influenced a great deal because of what we saw or heard or read, we'd like it, and then everybody else that is our associate or friend, they see it and they like it too. Or if we follow it, then that means we are very much give attention to what's been said, that we want to continue to follow something else that maybe this person puts out there somewhere. And on the receiving end, the receiving end is very important about this idea of like and follow too. If somebody notices that they have been liked or followed, then they feel a sense of self-worth or admiration or attention or consideration because somebody's liked them or followed them. Therefore, my point is this: we don't have any problem in follow and like. We don't have any problem at all with that. The big question is, whom do we follow? A couple of weeks ago, I talked about a lesson, whom do we follow? Talking about Jesus Christ, and we talk about several things in that regards about you have to leave some things, you have to sacrifice, You have to know that there's a lot of unknowns to following Jesus and all things regarding that. But one thing I did not talk about in that I want to talk about this morning, and that's these two things here. First one is this one right here in the book of John, chapter 6, verse 60 to verse 71, and that is, there are times when people lack understanding, and as a result, they fail to follow Jesus. Jesus, in the book of John, chapter 6, has fed 5,000 people, and then he begins to talk about after they have come back to him looking for more food, about verse 26 and 27, then Jesus gets into this discussion that they were fed by the manna in the Old Testament, by Moses. Then he begins to talk about himself and says, you need to know I'm the bread of life. In the beginning of verse 52 to verse 59, he talks about eating his flesh and drinking his blood. In verse 60, many of the disciples, when they heard this, said, this is a hard saying, who can hear it? And then verse 66, upon this, many of the disciples went back and walked no more with him. And Jesus said, therefore, unto the 12, would you also go away? And Simon answered and said, Lord, to whom shall we go? Thou hast the words of eternal life. And we believe and know that thou art the Holy One of God. It is very interesting that there are people who allow certain things to kind of get in their way from them understanding. There are certain prejudices that are there. There are certain things in life that are the preeminence that cause them lacking the opportunity to find themselves understanding what Jesus says. It may be very difficult. It probably is hard to grasp at the beginning, and as a result of it being difficult and hard, they don't go through the process of studying and learning. They just say, well, I need something that's a little bit easier. I don't want to spend my time trying to figure out what I'm supposed to be doing. And that's a very difficult problem that people have when it comes down to following Jesus. They just don't find themselves understanding the value of it. Then there is the second one that I want to talk to you about for the rest of the lesson, the new OCD. Obsessive comparison disorder. This happens to be the second thing that prevents people from following Jesus. One of the greatest impulses, I guess maybe, or the stimulus to this idea of OCD or obsessive comparison disorder is coveting. If you notice with me in the Old Testament, the book of Exodus chapter 20, very seldom do we find ourselves going over here probably looking at all these Ten Commandments, but in the last one, it says in verse 17 of Exodus chapter 20, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his oxen, nor his donkey, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. Then you find yourself looking at the book of Colossians chapter 3, and it emphasizes it a little bit more strongly here, maybe other than to say, just don't covet all these things. In verse 5 of the book of Colossians chapter 3 that was read to us just a moment ago by Josh, in this he says, in this little small phrase, covetousness, which is idolatry. I don't know if you remember, you may have used this term, you may have heard the term used quite often, but this person is green with envy. I don't know who coined that term, I don't know who started it. What does it mean, though? What does it mean to say green with envy? Anything that's green, and in the context of my mind, it makes me think of something that's growing. If that be the case, and I'm not saying this is the definition of the term green with envy, but if the idea of growing or life is involving in green with envy, then that means it has a tendency to get bigger than what we usually think that it is. It enters into the heart of the individual and it grows into something huge that it consumes the individual. And what's consuming the individual is this idea of comparison. They compare themselves with other people. There's something about feeding this idea of OCD with coveting that needs to be understood. First of all, we've got to ask ourselves the question, what is it that provokes envy? What provokes envy in us? Somebody writes a book, and then there's all these other books on the same kind of subject, and they look at all those books that are sold by the millions on that subject, but theirs has only got, they've only sold about 2 or 5 or 20. Millions versus 20. And then they see somebody drives this car, then they look at their car, and they begin to make this comparison. They see this person with this job, and then this person over here with this job, and then they compare, and as a result, they begin to be green with envy. You could just talk about so many different things. You could see this child do this thing, and this parent looks over there and sees this child doing this thing, or somebody else's child doing something, and they begin to make this comparison. So there's all kinds of things that go on in our life that provokes this idea of envy. And we don't really see it coming in many respects, but it's there. And we don't plan it in many cases. I realize, when it comes down to preaching, that there's another preacher out here better than I am. If I realize that all the things that pertain to this preacher is better than I am, knowledge, study, years of experience, sizes of congregation, members of gospel meetings, all those kind of things, I could very well, deep down in me, have a idea of envy because I compare myself to him and I'm not like him and I don't have the things that he's got, and as a result, therefore, I've got envy. And all I'm doing is making this comparison, and I covet what it is that he has. If I find out, though, that this man who is a better preacher than I am is teaching false doctrine, or he is an individual who has a hard time managing money, he is in debt, he has people calling him, creditors calling him, trying to get him to pay his bills, all those kind of things, then should I really continue to compare myself with that person because, well, even though he's a better preacher and all these other difficulties that he's got going on in his life. But it's all these other things about him that it really could cause me to covet. I think it's very interesting to know that envy is what comes as a result of us comparing ourselves to other people. That's really what the bottom line is. And envy can grow into something obsessive and controlling and captivating our heart. That's what you see in the term idolatry associated with Colossians chapter 3, verse 5. It's controlling, it's obsessive, it's captivating, it's controlling everything about us. It's hard to catch by the person that's involved. It's hard to catch by the person that's involved. We find ourselves involved in all these things, but then we find ourselves, it grows to the point that we don't realize it's there. If you remember in the listing of the Ten Commandments, the first five of the Ten Commandments involve the relationship that a person has with the Lord, God. And then from number 6 to number 10, it talks about the relationships of man with man. And we look at thieves, we look at do not steal, we look at do not kill, and we say, well, there's no problem with that. I'm not stealing anything, I'm not going to kill anything. But then we look at this last one, thou shalt not covet, and then we wonder, well, I don't know. I'm not too sure if I'm really involved in all that. I don't think that I am. But this idea of coveting is what really casts a reflection upon you. We compare ourselves with others, but the real reflection is us. We're trying to see us in them, or them in us. That's what we're doing when we talk about this idea of coveting and the idea of obsessive comparison disorder and jealousy and envy. And as a result, here's what we've done. We found ourselves forgetting all about the book of Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 13, that the whole duty of man is to fear God and keep his commandments. We've forgotten all about that, because we're so involved with this idea of OCD. Here's what we're doing. With this idea of jealousy and envy and obsessive comparison disorder, we found ourselves depraved. There's some deprivation that comes as a result of that. OCD is definitely one of those things where we find ourselves constantly looking at others and comparing ourselves with those other people, And I'm not talking about people that are Christians. I'm talking about people all over the world and all the relationships we've got. And then we find ourselves comparing ourselves to them, and we become to be so obsessed with that, it almost gets us to the point that we need something, some kind of doctor, to get us out of this mode. Thing is, there's not enough doctors around to take care of these people. We find ourselves looking at some social media event, picture, whatever, and we find ourselves going to bed with it. And we look at this, we see these 251 pictures of this particular thing, and next thing you know, we go to bed with anxiety, and we don't sleep good because we're worrying about what it is that we saw that's going on with these other people or this other person. And then we wake up with it, and then it starts all over again, and we find ourselves involved on all over again. A man called this OCD. He said it's the equivalent to the smallpox of our generation. That's what he called it, the equivalent of our smallpox of our generation. And here's the thing. By the time we look at all of that, and we have all that digesting it, because technology is throwing it out there, and we're just grabbing it all in, we're feeding ourselves with it, then at the conclusion of it, we come to this. As you probably have heard a lot of people say, that's not fair. It's not fair. I deserve better than what I'm receiving. I have the right to whatever the case may be. That's what we've done. That's what we're doing. And the person, as I said a while ago, the person that's doing it, can they really see that happening to them? And knowing that this is robbing them, that the heart is being caught, and it's robbing them of certain things. Diane and I were in a gospel meeting in Bowling Green, Kentucky several years ago. We were invited to eat supper with this couple that hadn't been married very long. I don't know if there was a few months or a couple of years, whatever. We went into this apartment building, and I remember walking up the steps, and we went into their apartment, very small. I think maybe had three rooms in it, maybe four at best. And we ate in their living room, and we ate on a card table. And they fed us lasagna and a salad. That's the best I remember about it. I know who they are, but I don't. That's about all I remember about that circumstance. And they weren't comparing themselves to anybody. And it didn't matter who it was that they were inviting in. They just wanted to show hospitality. They wanted to be generous. They weren't involved in OCD at all. They just wanted to do what they could. And I think that's something very, very important that we find out that we do what we can. Rather than being so obsessed, well, I got to make this big and fancy for the preacher to come in and eat at my house. Don't have to be that way. Doesn't have to be that way at all. But here's what we do. What happens as a result of this OCD, the deprivation is, number one, the possibility of contentment. One of the things that coveting does is it ruins the possibility of contentment. It just takes it away. It's the thief of it. One of the things that you'll notice in Philippians chapter 4 at the end of this and end of the chapter and the end of the book, in verse 11, Paul says, not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therein to be content. Therein to be content. I know how to be abased, I know how to abound. In everything and all things have I learned the secret, both to be filled and to be hungry, both to be abound and to be in want. I've learned to be content. Instead of finding ourselves involved in obsessive comparison disorder, find ourselves involved in the idea of contentment. In a society of comparison, it steals this away from us. It takes it away. Several years ago, I remember in a conversation with a preacher, gospel preacher, he's still preaching today. He was a young guy then. He's still young because he's younger than I am. At that moment in time, was preaching in a small congregation. He was being fully supported. The thing I remember him saying, he told me this, I think, at least five different times, that he's not receiving the support that he needs. And the brethren aren't supporting me. And I'm not getting enough. And that was just the tune he was singing in the song that he kept repeating. Same verse over and over again. And Paul, if there's anybody that could talk about, well, the brethren just started taking care of me, and I'm having to struggle over here, and I'm having to go here and go here and go here. If there's anybody that could say that, he could. But in verse 11, he says, I speak in respect of want. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I've learned in whatsoever state I am, therein be content. But OCD, in comparison of that preacher to other preachers, he was not making as much as they were. And therefore, that's what happens. We find ourselves not only jealous, we find ourselves coveting what the other person has. Now, if I said to him, do you know that you're involved in coveting? He'd probably say, well, you've got to be crazy. That's not possible. But if we find ourselves obsessively comparing ourselves to other people, then we'll find ourselves lacking contentment. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, you notice this case, and there's probably a lot we can learn from this one passage. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 6, he says, but godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world, for neither can we carry anything out. That's worth our attention. The second thing we are robbed as a result of this is edifying relationships. We don't like loneliness in many cases. We don't like to be isolated. We like to have other people around us. Okay, here's the thing that I want you to think about. As we go over here to 1 Corinthians chapter 12, and notice what is stated here in 1 Corinthians 12. If we're the kind of people that like to have others around us, here's the temptation we face. When it comes down to obsessive comparison disorder, and that is when we find ourselves getting out of the isolation loneliness, then we find ourselves with the people, then we start comparing ourselves to them. We start comparing. Therefore, but then what's stolen as a result of the obsessive nature to compare, we lose a tendency to receive edification or to give it to someone. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 14. The body is not one member, but many. If the foot shall say, because I'm not the hand, I'm not the body, it is not therefore not of the body. And if the ear shall say, because I'm not the eye, I'm not of the body, it is not, therefore, not of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where were the hearing? If the whole were the hearing, where were the smelling? But now has God set the members, each one of them, in the body, even as it pleased him. The comparison, the obsessive nature to compare you to some others. You can't all be the eye, and you can't all be the ear, and you can't all be the foot. You have to understand the contentment that we need to have in verse 18 and realize this is how you edify each other. In Ephesians chapter 4, the verse talks about in verse 16 and discusses this idea of edification. It says, to whom all the body fitly framed and knit together through that which every joint supplies according to the working and due measure of each several part, make the increase of the body unto the building up of itself in love. The building up of itself in love. It takes away the possibilities of edifying relationships when we're finding ourselves obsessively comparing ourselves with others. And then this one. The true you is lost and stolen away to the point of jealousy helps us develop the thought that I need to edit myself. Now, I'll tell you a little bit more about that as we get into this. But Proverbs chapter 27, verse 4 says something very clear and it very, very powerful. When I saw this verse this week, I thought, wow, this is absolutely powerful. Wrath is cruel, anger is overwhelming. And then he asked the question, but who is able to stand before jealousy? Who's able to stand before jealousy? Nobody. We all fall for it. We all fall head over heels in love with what the other person has. The jealousy that comes about in our life may very well have its root in the lack of our own faith and the strength of it. It's not stable. It's not secure. We don't really have the faith that we should have. And it could very well be that we found ourselves in a situation where there's somebody that has done something or said something or achieved something that we would like to either equal it or surpass it. Since I'm a grandparent, I'm going to just tell you something. I can pull out pictures that you would not believe. I can pull out pictures on phones. I can pull out pictures in wallets. I can pull out pictures in computers. I can pull out all those pictures. And if my children, our children, were to send us a picture, if Diane receives a picture, or if I receive a picture, then we get that picture. What's the first thing you think about when you get that picture? Besides just being impressed with what they do, what they say, what they're going with, is the next thought you have is, who can I show this to? Who do I know that needs to see this just like me? Who do I... And when we send out that whatever that is that they've done or achieved or gotten or received, whatever it is, and when we send out there, what's that done? Then for the people, the grandparents on the other end, or I should say even the parents on the other end, they get that and they say, well, how can my child get an award? How can my child receive this? How can they get the medal around their neck? How can they achieve the same certificate that they've got? In other words, we're going to do everything we can to edit ourselves, edit who we are and what we do in order that they will achieve this. In other words, when somebody highlights themselves, then the tendency is for us to highlight ourselves. Do we lust after that highlight? We want to be highlighted just like they do. We don't want to dismiss ourselves to say that what we're doing is not significant at all. But you see, this is a result of the OCD, the deprivation. We're not participating in rejoicing with them that rejoice and weep with them that weep, like Romans chapter 12, verse 15 says. We're thinking about, well, what about me? We let the picture and the image and the words that are stated describe who we are. That's what we do. We let them describe who we are. Satan tempted Adam and Eve in the very beginning with something that was very significant to me. We think it's the fruit, but it's the nature of the fruit. What power that fruit had. What they are presenting in the book of Genesis chapter 3 is, it's very interesting to me. Here's the situation. You're in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve, you got everything. I mean, you've got better than anybody else that ever lived. Naked, not ashamed, no problems. You got everything there at your disposal. This is definitely the Garden of Eden, we'd say. It's heaven. Satan comes to them and presents to them something that they did not have. Something that they did not have. As a result of seeing that there was something that they did not have after they really, in reality, had everything, then they fall for it in Genesis chapter 3, verse 6, Eve first and then Adam. And that's how this whole thing works, that we find ourselves seeing that we trust in the image that somebody presents from somewhere else rather than trusting in the fact that Genesis chapter 1, verse 26 says we're made in God's image. We're focusing upon us. Whereas in the Garden of Eden, they had this perfect provision. Everything was there. They really had no reason to be jealous at all of what it was that Satan was offering them, but that's what they wanted, and they got it. Instead of believing and trusting in God, they wanted to change their way because of the comparison of what they would be like if they ate it. They could be like God. That's exactly what Satan said you'd be. You'll be like God. Why don't we just trust and believe in the image that God put within us? Instead of trying to find ourselves editing who we are. But if somebody's child is put in preschool and our child is not put in preschool, then we think that maybe since our child is not in preschool, then we're a bad parent. And if our child isn't eating organic, and they're not sleeping on memory foam, and they're not having the latest this around their neck or this in their ears or this in their hands, and they've got this grade and they can speak Spanish at 5 and they can play the piano at 7, but we're looking and comparing ourselves and saying there's something about what they're doing that apparently is right, and what I'm doing about what I'm doing is apparently wrong. We find ourselves so obsessively compelled to compare what we're doing with everybody else. And as a result of that, do you know what that does to us as a parent? We try to fix it by running the race, hitting the road, and see what we can do to fast pace ourselves to catch up with them. To catch up with them. Equal to or exceeding them. And we become the hurried family. And we get, as they say, busy. And as a result of being busy, we get so hurried, we go past God. And the image he's put within us, we go past him to find ourselves molding to the image of the standard of all these other people, academically, dressed like them, athletically, whatever the case may be. We try to find ourselves compared to them, and rather than finding ourselves in the image of God, we go by their standard, not the standard of God. And here lies the problem. When the child or the grandchild, whoever the case may be, finds himself in, sees the parents involved in this obsessive comparison disorder, then they begin to adopt the same lifestyle. And they begin to hurry themselves to catch up with somebody else, busy themselves, and they go right like the parents. They go right past God and what God asked them to be so they can catch up with what everybody else is doing. That's OCD. That's jealousy. That's coveting. That's comparison. And we edit ourselves. How many of you, I'm going to raise of hands here. How many of you know that there is an app that you could get called Photo Editor? Image Editor. Image editor, okay? Do you know what that does? Middle school girls know how to do this. They can take a photo of themselves. I can take Mariah over here and take a photo of her. And if she knew all the skills, she could really brush that photo up and she could send it out to all the boys. To have a good image of who she is. They know how to work it. They know how to do a very good job of it. Therefore, in a very spiritual sense, we find ourselves so OCD, obsessive comparison disorder and jealous and coveting, we want to edit ourselves so that we can catch up with what's going on. And we find ourselves becoming to be just exactly what Romans chapter 12 verse 2 says we're not supposed to do, and that's conform ourselves to the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind that you may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Therefore, the cure for jealousy is to get rid of the competitive spirit that says we're going to compare ourselves with everybody else, and we're going to make a goal out there that we're going to be made in the image of God and not the image of the people in the world. While everybody in the world is so full of steroids, we need to find ourselves influenced by the Holy Spirit and fill ourselves up with that spirit. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 18 talks about. That's the kind of thing that we should be doing. And find ourselves coming to the realization that we need to be grateful for the measure of faith that Romans chapter 12 talks about in verse 3 to verse 8 that we receive from God. That measure of faith that he gave to us. This ability, this purpose. And then let God be the measurement of who we are. Because he will in no wise fail us, neither will any wise forsake us. And I believe the big question we ought to be asking ourselves is, who is the measurement? We got to find the answer to that question. Who is the measurement? Or maybe what is the measurement? But here's something else that we find ourselves as a result of the deprivation of OCD is we are stealing joy away from us. Besides stealing the true self, of who we are made in God's image, instead of stealing contentment, instead of stealing edifying relationships, we also steal joy. If someone out there is followed and liked more than I do, what does that do to me? What would that do to me? I'm sad. I'm just so depressed.
Because I'm not liked like everybody else is liked, and I'm not followed like everybody else is followed. It may help us understand a little bit about what was going on in the Pharisees' mind. When Jesus was walking upon the earth and he received these multitudes that were following him, and the numbers of the people that were following the Pharisees were diminishing. They were getting at a low number here. Never seen it this low. Never seen it this bad. And as a result of that, when I compare myself to others, then it steals the joy out of my heart, and I have a least sense of compassion towards somebody else. I don't have that compassion for them anymore. When other people have things, how do I feel? In a comparison world, we ought to practice Romans chapter 12, verse 15. Rejoice with them that rejoice, and weep with them that weep. That's the attitude that we should be acquiring. And pray very sincerely and at length. Pray that we have this sincere effort toward this attitude rather than the OCD of comparison. Rejoice with them that rejoice and weep with them that weep. And I'm going to give you four words to start practicing. Say four simple words. I'm happy for you. Now that looks like five, really, but it's four. If you go by the English way of I apostrophe M, but if you want to go by the five, that's perfectly fine. I'm happy for you. I'm happy for you. Whenever there is the achievements, whenever there is someone who has these new shoes, whenever somebody has the different car or the house or the grades or whatever it is, you put whatever it is, whenever that is, four simple words you can say, I'm happy for you or I'm happy for them, if it's a family, whatever the case. This is practicing Matthew chapter 22, 39, where already in verse 37 he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And then verse 39, love your neighbor as yourself. This is practicing this idea of loving your neighbor. The power of contentment and the power of joy and the power of seeing ourselves in the image of Christ is what fixes these people who say, it's not fair. It's not fair. It takes care of these people who say, well, I deserve better. You can joy in all the things that others have, and you can celebrate by complimenting them with saying, I'm happy for you. I'm very, very happy for you. If you started doing that, then you could teach your children to do that whenever they started finding themselves wanting to compare what they are, have, do, achieve with somebody else. Ultimately, I want to leave you with this right here. And that is to compare yourself with Christ Jesus. Compare yourself with Christ Jesus. Over and over in the scriptures, 1 Corinthians 11, Galatians chapter 2, Ephesians chapter 5, Philippians chapter 2, verse 5, 1 Peter 2, 21, 1 John 2, 6, and in 1 John chapter 3, verse 2, verse 3, all those passages talk about imitating Christ, following his pattern, following him. If you say you abide in him, like 1 John 2 says, if you will say you abide in him, the walk as he walked. All these things compare. And here's the interesting thing about that. 1 John 3 says, if we are finding ourselves involved in all the comparisons to Christ and following his image and being like him, then we'll find ourselves like him someday in heaven. Like 1 John 3, verse 2, verse 3 says, be like him and see him even as he is. While we've been down here working on being like him in the world, then we'll be able to see him just like he is, and we'll be like him forever. The wonderful thing about it. Teach your children this, but first teach yourself the value of that too. And then the 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 3 and verse 5 says, turn your imaginations toward him. Let it be captivated by Jesus, not by everything that's in the world. And that's a struggle every single day, because we have people that are spending millions on top of millions of dollars every day for all of you people to get you to see that there is this thing that you don't have, this thing you should want, and this thing that you need, and as a result, you don't have to worry about how much money it takes right now. Don't have to worry about your credit. Just try for 30 days, and at the end of this month, and if you want to, you can have it for X amount of dollars. But let's not worry about that. Let's just make sure that we get what we need right now. Millions of dollars are spent on that, to see your imagination soaring as to how you can compare to somebody else who has just what they're talking about already. Here's the struggle, though. If we find ourselves trying to look like Jesus, compare ourselves to Him, do you know what the first default is? Here's what it is. He's perfect. I'm not. And here's the next thing we do. We default to this. We default to say, He's perfect. I'm not. I can't. As a result, therefore, I see people out who are not perfect like me, and therefore I compare myself to them, especially when it comes to their sin. We compare our sin to their sin. Theirs is not as bad as mine is. Or theirs is, theirs is. Theirs is pretty bad. I wonder if I would ever do that. And I think it's very important to know that what Jesus is looking for is for us to look to Him when we are in sin. He doesn't say, okay, well, since you're sin, then you can't compare yourself to me and be in my image anymore. He says, I want you to come to me. Come to me. That's why Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2 says it the way it does. Looking unto Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. Hebrews chapter 5 says He's the author of eternal salvation to all them that obey Him. You come to Him. Even when you think that you cannot find yourself coming to His image. Because He wants you to be like Him. Instead of saying, or I should say maybe, instead of comparing your sin to somebody else's, just come to Jesus so your sin can be forgiven. And walk with Him. And be what He needs you to be. Like Him in this world. Bow your obedience to Him, having changed your way of life, not conformed to the world anymore, but you want to be transformed by the renewing of your mind. You want to be like Jesus, be baptized in the water, just like He was buried, rose again. You'll be buried in the water to come up walking in a new life. That's opportunity for you to get away from the OCD and get into Jesus Christ to develop the true image that God wanted you in the beginning. Do what's right. While together we sing this song.